You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you there. That sounded freaky.
What?
When you said resources.
I love resources.
Well, once again, we are wanting to remind you about episode 99 and 100. This is going to be huge. We're going to do 100 emojis gargantuan. Everywhere. Yeah, it's going to be, I like that,
wall-to-wall.
Gargantuan.
Gargantuan.
Behemoth. You got that Jewish, you know, that.
Well, it is from the Bible. Yeah. I'm just saying. In Job. It's in the book of Job.
In Job.
Chapter 39 or 40. I always confuse where Leviathan and Behemoth are.
Well, once again, if you submit your question in and are selected as our 99th or 100th episode's question, then you will win
a free
gargantuan
trip to. Oh, wait.
Swag box. Yeah, if you're going to pay for the free trip to your local grocery store.
I was going to say your mailbox up 100 swag.
Yeah. All right. So I got to say this. You said mailbox and it just popped into my head. As a Canadian.
I can't say what I did to mailboxes as a teenager in this country because it's a felony.
But as a Canadian, when I moved to the States, I had a letter that I had to mail out. You know, I had to pay a bill or whatever. So I was trying to look for the mailbox. Because in Canada, there are these red mailboxes every so often that you put your letters in. Yeah. And I was looking everywhere and I was like, why can't I mail this letter? What's with this? And then I asked my neighbor and he was like, you just put it in your mailbox and stick the flag up. It's like, that's what the flag's for? This is amazing. I mean, that I know to every American listening, wow. They're like, that seems... Like, how would you not know that? But Canadians don't do that. So thank you, America.
And there
thank
are people you. Sitting in your churches right now.
Who didn't know that?
No. There are people sitting in your churches right now that there's something that you think is that simple and that, you know, basic, and they do not know it. They're waiting for you to tell them.
I like that leadership lesson. I like that transition you made. That's good.
Put the flag up, boys and girls. Put the flag up.
So be sure to submit your question at speakpipe.com/newchurches if you're on your mobile device, or if you're on your computer, go to newchurches.com and hit the sidebar on the right.
Just leave your voicemail. That question. You don't have to put the flag up.
Well, today's question is from Mark. I'm not going to say his last name because I think I'll butcher it, but it's another question on multi-site. So let's listen in.
What kind of leadership model works best in a multi-site church environment?
All right, world's shortest question.
It's like a 5 second. That's a
it was.
New record.
I mean, but that was like short and sweet to the point. So he probably didn't like all the banter we just did.
No. He's like, to the point.
But thank you, Mark, for submitting that. So what kind of leadership models work best for multi-site church environments?
Well, you probably have to
determine what type of multi-site.
I know that's
model
part
you
of the.
That's
part of the issue. Is you know it goes back to DNA once again for
which
people.
Which I think honestly was episode one for us or episode
it may
two.
Have been. It may have been.
Yeah. Which is crazy because we're in episode 96 now.
There you go. But it is. I've probably talked about it once or twice or four times, but you know it's a DNA question to a certain degree. Because, you know, you want to start from a really firm foundation, which means I got to know my governance. Mm-hmm. So from a leadership standpoint, ultimately, if you have elders, well, I need to know, are elders on all the campuses? Are they from all the campuses? Are they from the main campus? And we're going to raise up elders on the campus? Or no, we're totally fine with having a centralized elder board.
Yeah, because base level, if you're a multi-site church, you're going to share a budget and you're going to share leadership, right? But in terms of what that leadership looks like, right, depends on your polity as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, polity is a big issue here. So this question could be answered like 14 different ways, ultimately, you begin to you know, break off from once you begin to not break off, branch out.
Yeah.
From different types
of leadership. But regardless of your denomination, if you're multi-site, each of your campuses are not going to have their own elder boards, or not going to have the top level of leadership. The main decision is not necessarily going to be at each campus if you consider yourself to be a part of a multi-site church.
Well, I don't know, Daniel, because there are people going back to the DNA thing. You know, I often say, hey, and I'm who knows where I got it from. But it was, I think it's actually Lencioni. Mm. We're talking about, are we going to be cousins in an organization that's dispersed? Are we going to be twins, siblings, or cousins? Mm-hmm. So that's what your church has to answer, or even second cousins. Is how much DNA are we going to share?
Yeah.
Like, so if it's identical, then we're trying to do everything identically, and you probably have a centralized, very centralized elder deal. And that's probably a sibling as well on the cousins or second cousins. That's where you might see, I don't know, almost disagreement on, is this a multi-site or is this a denomination? Because honestly, I think to a certain degree, when you get to a certain number of sites, it's almost like neo-denominationalism. I mean, you're a mini denomination if you have, you know, probably, I'm not going to put numbers on it, but
yeah. So are you telling me that you've seen multi-site churches that where there is not one central leadership? I mean, I'm not saying that every campus should have their own form of leadership over it, but I'm just asking, have you ever seen a multi-site model where there's not a representation from all the different campuses?
I've seen a network that calls itself a multi-site.
Okay. Okay. But there was a central.
There's central, but the
Central leadership, though.
The decision rights were dispersed. It was really more of a network than a multi-site.
Yeah. But in the traditional
or
sense,
neo-denomination.
Yeah. So in the traditional sense of a multi-site church, there is definitely going to be that shared leadership in some form or fashion.
Yeah. So everybody up front needs to know governance and decision rights.
Yeah.
And I think you're good to go. Now, I think probably the real heart of his question is probably more Sunday to Sunday, day to day leadership of the church.
Yeah. So right before we move there, I just want to share one more example. I've seen multi-site churches that will share name, share resources, and share leadership, but every campus is autonomous.
Yes.
Right. So one of our authors on newchurches.com, Drew Hyun at Hope Church NYC, that's how they operate as well.
Totally. And that is more of a cousin.
Yeah.
When you get into second cousins,
yeah,
that's when you get your network.
Yeah. So let's move into
denomination. But everybody, sometimes, you know, some families are really close with their second cousins. I don't know.
Yeah. So let's move into leadership models from a day-to-day, week-to-week basis for multi-site church environments, different types of leadership environments.
Okay. So my favorite multi-site model that I was part of or able to implement was having a campus pastor and then sometimes one other staff person that was full time. Sometimes it was two other people that were staff time. If you had two others, then I was, you know, it was a guy and a girl. And one was doing like guys groups and couples groups, and the other one was doing and like internal teams or and then she was doing, you know, girls groups and external teams and maybe some stuff that.
And an example of an internal and external team.
Oh, sorry. External teams would be anything that's outreach oriented that doesn't happen on Sunday.
Okay.
So that would be, you know, some of the sports things that we did. It would be anything that we were doing to engage in the community. And sometimes that was done through groups and sometimes it was done through individuals, but it was outreach oriented. So that was all the marketing, for lack of a better term. And, you know, when we would send people out to do blitzes. So blitzes were, I had the luxury of being in a town that had 84 metro stops. Now I think it has 106. But the last number I remember was 84. I'm sure it was probably even more than that before I left. But, you know, the great thing about that was you could organize a group of people to go out and tell people about your church in short order just by doing rave cards. But it was all those types of teams that were outward focused. Inward focus would be internal teams, would be ushers, greeters, parking, you know, welcome newcomers,
how
ministry.
How about children's and worship?
Children's and worship would have also been internal teams.
Okay. So you broke it down at such a high level so that you would have the campus pastor and you'd have an external teams, internal teams.
That was my ideal. Okay. I loved that model.
Okay.
Because it was fairly lean and you could handle several hundred.
So then the worship leader, the children's
part-time
director, they're part-time?
Part-time or volunteer.
Okay. Part-time volunteer or
part-time or volunteer.
Okay, gotcha.
Which I know some people will scream at me right now. Children's people will scream at me right now.
Yeah.
But if you're organized and you've got great people, then you can pull that off.
Yeah, especially from some of the resources that Central can lean and lend over as well, right? Because the children's pastor at a multi-site campus, when Central services are operating well, they don't necessarily have to do all of the administrative functions that a full-time children's pastor would do in a solo church, right? But that's if they're organized well. There are multi-site churches where children's pastors just don't talk to each other, where worship pastors don't, where campus staff aren't talking to another. So in that regards, how would you handle the staff on each campuses relating to one another, not just to their campus pastor, but to their peers?
Well, I mean, you know, it goes back to two more Lencioni books, really. So you've got politics, silos, and turf wars, which brings up working groups.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great book for a team to go through as they're considering multi-site, or when they're already in multi-site and they're starting to experience problems around their third campus or so.
Yeah.
And then the other piece is going back to the original. If you can get your governance and decision rights down, and when I say decision rights, that's where the crux of this answer comes from. And that's bucket one, bucket two, bucket three. So bucket one is our DNA. It does not change. We all agree on what goes in bucket one and it stays there. Doesn't change. Bucket two is maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So this is things that, that it may vary from campus to campus. If you want to do it, you can do it, but you need to inform everyone and get, you know, an ultimate yes. And then bucket three is, you know, go for it. So it's no, maybe, and yes. It's how those buckets are kind of laid out.
But sometimes several bucket three decisions happen in successive order without communicating to others at other campuses. Wouldn't that eventually affect your bucket two?
No, not if you have good communication within your working group.
Okay.
So what a working group is a community of practice.
But if there's not that communication between the two campus,
then you're toast.
Yeah.
You have to have governance put into place. You have to have decision rights clearly defined, and then you have to have working groups, because the reason why you have to have working groups is you're not going to be able to clearly define all your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so the working group has to work through it.
So they're living out
that document.
They're actually living out that document.
Yeah. And if they're going to change something, or if there's a discrepancy or disagreement within the working group, that's when they're bringing it to the strategy team. And somebody in the working group can, you know, say, hey, we want to change this. And everybody goes, that's bucket one.
Yeah.
We can't touch that.
Yeah. And I appreciate how, you know, we're going here and we're talking about this, because sometimes in a someone who's excited about multi-site, they're either really excited because of the impact or they love the idea of the organization and the structure. But unless you have people living it out, constantly revisiting the vision, constantly working out, you know, having those living document teams, then it's going to be more of a wish than a reality.
I would also say you need to make a really good decision on who you put in charge of the working group. So it could either be a person who is not necessarily have the formal authority, but as strategic.
Yeah. And relational.
Relational. Because the person who is at the original campus often assumes that they're the grand poobah mm-hmm. of all things children's, as an example. And so if they may be the most experienced and they may have the most insights, but they may not.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at the end of the day, I would suggest a rotation of leadership in those groups as well. So it's like, you know, from time to time, you have a different leader who's in charge.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, we've talked about this in a few other episodes as well, but I'm glad we were able to revisit leadership models and go a little bit more in depth into it. We'll put we'll put links into the show notes for the other episodes that you can reference to learn more about this topic. But thanks again for listening in, and be sure to submit your question for episode 99 and 100.